Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. My name is John Peters, and I'm joined by Kyle McKelvey. Later on in this episode, we'll be joined by Harris Frommer to talk about College Baseball Nation's All-America teams. There's a lot to cover, so let's go ahead and get started. All right, another week closer to college baseball, just 4 weeks away at this point. And we got a lot more to talk about this week. But of course, joining me as always is Kyle McKelvey. Kyle, how are you doing?
Doing well. How about you? So it was your birthday yesterday.
It was my birthday and the two-year anniversary of College Baseball Nation. Yeah, 2 years ago on my birthday, I was like, well, maybe I should start a website. And that's here we are now, recording a podcast. But let's cover some of the big news in the last week in college baseball. And there was a lot of news, and a lot of it was good news, I would say. So lots to talk about. First off, in kind of minor news, but important, the College World Series scheduling in terms of games at the College World Series, it was announced today, has been shuffled around a little bit. So basically, there's one day in the middle that's getting chopped off. It possibly could lead to a little bit shorter rest time for teams, but more importantly, what it's going to do is bring the National Championship Series more onto that weekend, which I think just in terms of a fan experience is going to make it better. It's going to make it easier for a fan to show up for that final National Championship Series over the weekend and not have to worry about taking as much time off. And it's just going to be a little bit easier for fans to manage. I know, Kyle, you and I, we got there and like there was all of a sudden this like weird like day break in between like the semifinals and the National Championship Series, and like it went over into the work week, and there's just kind of an awkward scheduling there at the end, and they're kind of solving that problem.
I know we had to take off a lot of PTO for that week.
Yeah,
and so this will help that, just trying to consolidate, and it'll help draw more national eyes who aren't like the diehard fans, like watching the weekend games like that. They won't go up against just random midweek TV.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully it's a good thing for college baseball. It seems like coaches were excited about it, but more pressing. And so I think that's starting 2022. So let's talk 2021 now though. Some of the things that we saw this week is that the Big 12 voted on Tuesday, the athletic directors met to discuss the 2021 college baseball schedule. And they have decided to move forward with pretty much a regular schedule, three game weekends, including non-conference and opportunities for midweek games. And last week we talked about this a little bit. It seemed like they were heading potentially to four game weekends, but we did have, I think with the SEC going forward with three game weekends and some other conferences, it seemed that there was some momentum behind staying the course with regular scheduling, and that's ultimately what was decided. So the Big 12 is moving forward with normal schedules. And then in the SEC, we started actually getting schedules released. So first off, we had a lot of conference schedules released, and long story short there, they're using the same matchups as 2020, but the order of those matchups might be shuffled around a little bit. But we're also seeing some non-conference series, and one that really stood out to me was opening weekend, brand new ballpark, Florida ballpark. We're going to have the Miami Hurricanes coming into town against rival number one Florida, and that's going to be a pretty special matchup.
Yes, definitely. Last year, Miami wants some vengeance from Florida coming in and sweeping them at their own place, so it'll be what a great way to ruin a home debut would be to get two or three wins at Florida. And Miami's looking really talented, so this might be a really tough test for them starting off the year. And if they only win one game, that still could look really good for them for a really good outlook for this year. But yeah, they're a really good team, but this is going to be a really fun matchup to watch.
Miami definitely has something of a Florida problem. I think it's they're seeking some marquee wins over Florida, but talent is definitely the word of the day for Miami. they lost their weekend rotation, but they just have a comedy of talent coming in. They did get bumped down to number 22 in our preseason rankings. They were in the top 10 at the end of last year, but of course losing your weekend rotation is a tough blow to handle. But this is the type of opening weekend series that I would say is a little bit of a win-win for them. Even if they don't win, even if they get swept, I think it's possible that this could be the type of series where it could be that little bit of a wake-up call for these young guys. You know, like, this is welcome to college baseball. This is the type of talent you're going to go up against in the ACC down the road. And that's ultimately, you know, where the push comes to shove, where they want to be able to compete for an ACC championship.
Gets my blood pumping. I'm excited.
Really stoked for that one.
Yeah.
Also, in college baseball news, so one of the possible casualties from COVID to the 2021 season were some of these early season tournaments. And at least the ones in the state of Texas seem to be moving forward mostly as planned. So the Frisco Classic had to do a little bit of shuffling with teams. They originally had Michigan State in their group of four teams playing in that tournament. The Big Ten, though, with their cancellation of non-conference games, that led to Michigan State backing out of that tournament. And they ended up adding Dallas Baptist to the lineup, which actually I think is a pretty big upgrade from Michigan State. Dallas Baptist is another top 50 team for us, and they're going to join Missouri, Oklahoma, and Arizona, which Arizona, I think it's going to be possibly the favorite in that tournament, but I mean, don't sleep on Oklahoma or Dallas Baptist either. And I mean, Missouri is a team that we don't have inside of our top 50, but definitely dangerous. Shriners College Classic in Houston is moving forward as planned with a whole bunch of Texas teams. We did hear today that the Aggies are backing out of that. They've replaced that tournament with a home series against New Mexico State. The Aggies cited something related to COVID for why they backed out of that, maybe the number of trips they're willing to take, things like that. But that tournament is still going to go forward as planned at the home of the Houston Astros. And then kind of the marquee tournament, which is going to be opening day weekend, is the College Baseball Showdown, which is a tournament happening at Globe Life Park in Field. That's right, they changed the name. Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas, home of the Texas Rangers, which has hosted the World Series, and now will be hosting the College Baseball Showdown. So Kyle, I know you were on the media call this morning, so what are you hearing so far about the plans for that tournament?
Yeah, so there are six teams, three Big 12, three SEC. One conference will play the other, so it'll be Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Arkansas versus TCU, Texas, and Texas Tech. Those three conferences will play the other, or those three teams will play the other from the other conference. So that's six, all six of those teams are in our top 12. So that's just going to be an electric atmosphere with 14 to 15,000 fans is what has been announced today, but on that call, obviously masks and social distance and no bags, but it'll be really cool to have all those local teams. TCU and Tech and Texas are pretty local in Arkansas. There's a lot of Arkansas fans in the DFW Metroplex. So it'll be a really, really fun atmosphere with a ton of talent. We have a lot of those players in our All-America team and on our top 25, like prospects. I remember last year we tried to pick the winners of the Shriners Classic. I don't know if I want to do that this year. There's a lot of the same teams. We got most of those wrong last year. And then
ended bad up one being, for us.
ended up being Baylor who won the whole thing, and we had picked them to go 0-3. So
to be fair, no one saw that coming though.
No, that was a shocking tournament.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was fun.
All right, no predictions from us on that. And I know the head coaches of those teams were wary about predictions, and it seemed like, if anything, they were all kind of tempering expectations, where they all had nothing but nice things to say about how good and all their opponents would be. I mean, it makes sense. If you saw all six of those teams come June in Omaha, I mean, it wouldn't be totally shocking, right?
Yeah, we wanted to hear on the call, I wanted to hear some hate back and forth, some bad blood get started up, but that's just the instigator in me.
Yeah, I mean, you have Arkansas there with all these Southwest Conference rivals, and I mean, not just that, but so many of these teams have faced off in Omaha. So it's I think brewing grounds for rivalry. There's going to be emotions will be high. It's going to be the first game that these guys play in like 300 days or whatever it's been. So I think it's going to be just an amazing atmosphere. Probably the most fans we're going to see at games all year, right? 14,000-15,000. That's going to be a huge number of fans there at those games, especially as a lot of other schools have announced stuff closer to 25% attendance, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 fans a lot of these other places. So it's going to be a chance to get a lot of eyes on really top quality college baseball.
Let's see. I'm doing the math real quick. Globe Life field capacity is 40,000. So 14,000 of that divided by that would be about 35%. So a little bit more than what we're seeing in other college stadiums, but it'll still feel pretty spread out because it's pretty big stadium.
We had a podcast first right there. Kyle got out his TI 80p plus, it looked like, to do some math.
30XS, thank you very much.
Oh, never mind.
But, yeah, hopefully it'll be nice weather so that the stadium, the roof can be opened. It'll be a great atmosphere.
Yeah, and even if the weather isn't good, though, that's one nice thing is that, you know, with that roof, that college baseball will be played, and that's exciting. Mm-hmm. I know one thing came up, though, is that stadium only has 4 clubhouses. And if you have 6 teams playing in any given day, they were talking about like putting guys in like batting cages for locker rooms or something.
Yeah. So, like holding them over, just like wait there for minutes while these guys shower and then you go in there. That seems like a mess.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully with games all being staggered, that should work. But I know COVID protocols make things a little bit tougher in terms of getting in and cleaning things. But I mean, testament to these coaches, to the Texas Rangers and these teams for finding a way to get something like this going. I think this is going to be just a really exciting way to start off the college baseball season.
Oh, absolutely. Just imagine, though, that if one game on the very first game goes into extras, and then we have like delays of trying to move people in and out without getting too close to each other, like that would be going to be interesting. But
right,
yes.
Now those evening games are scheduled to start at 7 p.m. And I mean, I think it's a little bit of early season tournament tradition where that at least like one night has to go past midnight. Like there's got to be like one game where there's like, you know, there was an 11 inning game before it. And, you know, it just, you're there way past your bedtime watching college baseball. And it's just the best thing ever.
I have money that it'll be TCU.
Yeah, TCU finds a way to extend games for sure.
I'm not.
All right, so last thing now we want to touch on before we invite Harris in to talk about All-America teams is something that's come up a lot. So we were talking about on social media what we thought were the best mid-major teams. And in that conversation, we were excluding East Carolina and UCF and Tulane, because at least up until now, we have not considered the American Conference to be a mid-major conference. That's at least something more like a power conference. But I want to settle it once and for all now. Is the American a Power 5 conference in baseball? Is it a Power 6 conference? Should we just toss out this terminology just out the window for college baseball? Kyle, tell me how to think.
I think the latter is what I would say. Toss out this terminology altogether and just call it power conference and mid-major conference.
I'm a simple-minded person. I like the idea of power conferences.
Yeah. Yeah. So just having like whatever number you want to quantify it. But I mean, the American has put a lot of teams in the postseason, at least the last 6 years. They haven't had as much success compared to other quote unquote Power 5 conferences we're a little bit biased from like a football country, just trying to like simplify things, and like football is what drives everything. And so there's Power Five in football, and we kind of just expect those teams to be really good at every sport that they have. And that's not necessarily the case. The Big Ten is one team that you is kind of on the lower end of the Power Five, the quote Power Five for baseball. They have not a lot of postseason success, aside from 2019, of course. We had Michigan make it to the national championship series. So I think before that, people wanted to put the American in that conversation. They haven't had as much postseason success, though, with only one Omaha appearance and no wins in that appearance. But that was in 2014 from Louisville, who's not even in the American anymore. They're in the ACC. Then there's the Big West, who has not had many appearances, and it's all from the same teams, but they have a 58% post-game or postseason win percentage. So that is an insane mark, because unless you win the whole thing, you're guaranteed two losses for every team. So that's a really, really good win percentage in the postseason.
All right, there's already a lot to unpack from what you said. First off, because this is audio format, all you listeners at home are missing out on Kyle using air quotes every time he says Power Five. So if you can't hear it,
podcast is a visual medium.
Yeah. So, all right, let's back it up to, let's say, points we can definitely agree on. So in college baseball, the SEC, ACC, Big 12, power conferences. Yes?
Yes. Yes.
I think it's without a doubt, those are the conferences that you're definitely you can bank on 4, 5, I mean, ACC, SEC at this point, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams making it to regionals. You know, you expect probably any given year in Omaha, 5 or 6 of the 8 teams will be from that conference, those conferences. I think Pac-12 is a power conference in college baseball as well. I mean, you have Oregon State winning national championship recently. It's maybe has some issues with depth, but has not had any fewer than 4 teams make a regional, and always have had a super regional host, and they're always a contender. Are we in agreement there? Is the Pac-12 in the power conference conversation?
I agree. Yeah, the depth isn't there as much as you'd like, but with UCLA being the one overall seed last year, everyone kind of forgot about them when they lost it in the Supers to Michigan. But also in 2016, Arizona was the national runner-up. They lost to Coastal. Couldn't think of America's darling, Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, so but they've been in the conversation. Right. Not just in the conversation. They've been in the fight. Like they've been there at the end, right?
And exactly.
Won national championships. Oregon State has done it. Stanford has been a top 8 seed. UCLA has been a top 8 seed recently. So Arizona State last year was just one of the most ridiculously talented teams. Like, you know, number 1 draft picks coming out of the conference, things like that. I think it is definitely in the upper echelon. But now where you're choosing to bring this debate is conference number 5. And one thing that you brought up was Michigan's run to the College World Series last 2 seasons ago now. And is that run to the College World Series enough to put the Big Ten over the American? Because, I mean, that you said that something that the American hasn't done is had success in Omaha. And, like, can one team having, you know, 1 month of really good baseball elevate the whole conference? Or in your eyes, is that not enough?
So I briefly touched on this. I think, well, part of the problem for the Big Ten is that the bottom of it is just very, very bad. There are 14 teams, and like in the last few years, Michigan State's not been that good, Penn State's not been that good, Purdue had some success like six or so years ago, 7 years ago now. But yeah, just the bottom of the conference is not as good. So if you lopped off the bottom, like the worst 6 teams, from the Big Ten, then I would probably think of the Big Ten a lot better, because I chose six teams because there are 14 teams in the Big Ten and 8 baseball playing teams in the American. So that would get that down to comparable numbers. I think
Wisconsin doesn't have a baseball team, so only 13.
Oh, 13. Dang it. 13. Okay. Well, five then, but either way. Yeah. So I think we can see that the American has some good teams at the top, but they're all kind of beating up on each other maybe. And so like during the year, cause there's not as much bottom, you know, like the Big Ten has some teams at the top that just continue to beat up on the bottom teams. And there's not as much balance, I guess.
Yeah, and I think you see that play out in terms of at-large bids. The teams from the Big Ten that get at-large bids oftentimes are 5 games over 500, while a team from the American can get in with an at-large bid with a little bit closer to a 500 record, because a 500 record is harder to get in the American than it is in the Big Ten.
Yeah, agreed.
All right.
Do we want to talk about UConn?
Let's talk about UConn, because they just left the American, and it seems odd. Did they go from a power conference team, a power team in baseball, to a not power team just because they switched conferences? What's your thought?
I think, if they can continue to have the success that they've had, then maybe, but in postseason specifically, or non-conference, I guess. But they're just going to probably beat up on their own conference. We saw that they added Virginia, Texas Tech, and what was the other one, the third one?
Southern Miss,
right. All 3 road series to start the year. So if they can show that they're competitive in those, and those are really hard games to be competitive in, because that's 2 top 10 teams, and I think we have Southern Miss in our top 50. They could just beat up, just to up their RPI in those road non-conference games. But I think
to say the Big East is not a power conference.
No, not maybe in basketball, but not in baseball.
All right. So I don't know if we're getting anywhere with this. I think to wrap it up, let's say we know that there's 4 conferences that are really good. My instinct is that the American is better than the Big Ten. So I don't know if I'm willing to say Power 6 conferences, but at the very least, if someone says power conferences in college baseball, in my mind, that's including the American.
Me too. I agree.
We're going to take a quick break now. After the break, we'll be joined by Harris Frommer to talk about College Baseball Nation's All-America teams. All right, up next, we're joined by Harris Frommer, who has spent a lot of time and effort putting together College Baseball Nation's All-America teams. So first off, thanks so much for joining us, Harris.
Thanks for having me, John. Good to be with you.
And also here we have Kyle still. So really, I want to start out addressing a lot of concerns that we've gotten on social media. So we did 2 All-American teams. They're on our website, collegebaseball.info, and we just did 2 teams, so somebody was going to get left out, some teams were going to get left out. So I want to start off straight up, like, what gives? Like, why aren't there any Ole Miss players? Why aren't there any Texas Tech players? What was your thought process behind some of that?
So let's start off with Ole Miss. I think the most, for lack of a better term, the most famous player in Ole Miss, or the one that's gotten the most notoriety while he's been at school, is right-handed pitcher Gunnar Hoglund. And, you know, he's been famous since high school. He was, you know, a top talent coming out of the prep ranks. He's tall, he's lanky, he's got really good stuff. There's a lot of projectability with him. It's not on Hoglund that he's not on the team. It's just, as we've discussed before, John and Kyle, the fact that the college pitching ranks right now are chock full of really good, really projectable pitchers. And the technology and the coaching at the college ranks is on the pitching side is better now than it's ever been. And, you know, you look at last year, you look at this year, there are guys who fell into the 30s last year and guys who will undoubtedly fall into the 30s this year, who 10 years ago would have probably been picked in mid or high teens. And as a result, a guy like Hoglund gets left off. Again, it's to no fault of his own. It's just that the college pitching ranks are so stacked right now. The other guy from Ole Miss who would probably feel snubbed is the catcher, Hayden Dunhurst, who I believe is draft eligible next year. Again, he's a top-tier catcher. If we did a third team, he'd probably be my guy. He'd probably be the catcher on the third All-America team. However, we only did two teams, so he got admitted. But, I mean, he's a guy who very easily could go in the first round next year.
And then is it
– sorry, yeah, go ahead.
To hop in there, is it fair to say then in terms of Texas Tech that their talent might be a little bit younger? Like, I know someone you're excited about is Jace Young, but he's 22, draft eligible. And what were your thoughts there around Texas Tech?
Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. If there's a guy from Texas Tech who should be on one of the All-America squads and isn't, it is Jace Young. He showed very well last spring, and then in the summer with Santa Barbara, he put up good numbers, and a couple of scouts I spoke to were really impressed by what they saw. He's a stocky kid. He's 5'11", 6 feet, about 200 pounds, maybe even a little over, but he's got a nice left-handed, balanced left-handed swing. He's got a lot of power. And the question with him is he going to be a second baseman at the next level, or is he going to be a third baseman? I believe he played predominantly a third base last year. Excuse me. He did play predominantly a third base last year, but did see some time at second. He saw a good amount of time at second base with Santa Barbara last summer as well. And he's an interesting guy to follow. And again, if we had a third team, he'd probably be on there either as a second baseman or third baseman.
And it seems like he might be a little bit quicker than his older brother, who's kind of one of that more traditional big power hitter guy who's rising up the Texas Ranger minor leagues right now, but clearly a great baseball family right there. So moving on now that we've addressed the issues with our All-America teams, you spent a lot of time, you thought about a lot of guys, and I just want to hear from you, who stands out on your All-America teams? Who's someone that you're really excited about?
Well, I'll give you two guys from each team, and coincidentally, it's two draft guys who are draft eligible this upcoming July, and two guys who are draft eligible 2022. The guys from this year, one's a position player, one's a pitcher. Judd Fabian is a position player, from a center fielder from Florida, and the pitcher is Jack Leiter from Vanderbilt. Let's start with Fabian. Talking to scouts, the one thing I kept hearing is every tool he has, the five tools he has, each projects as above average at the major league level. Essentially, every tool is at least a 55. He's also a guy who's very, very young for his class. I mean, last year we had Spencer Torkelson. I believe his birthday was second half of August, and he was, considered very young for his class. If I'm not mistaken, Fabian's birthday is a month later in the calendar than Torkelson, so he's a baby, all things considered in his class. Torkelson had a decent freshman year, but then really exploded on the Cape, slugged about 500, showed a lot of power, also showed he can play a very good center field. I expect really big things from Fabian this year. In fact, I expect that he's going to be the first college position player taken. Moving over to Jack Leiter, I just as a rule, and I've followed the draft for decades, pitching at the front of the draft really scares me. There's so many unknowns between health issues, stalling and development, so on and so forth. But if there was a pitcher, I would take early in the draft, i.e. the top five picks, it would be Leiter. I mean, even though he's considered undersized at about 6 feet, 190 pounds, he's got phenomenal stuff. He's got phenomenal command. He's got bloodlines. The only thing he really doesn't have at this point is a track record at the college level, because last year his season was interrupted after 15 or so innings. In fact, I didn't realize this until I read it recently. He did not record one out in the SEC. So, that's the one strike against him. But the names you hear as comps for him, Sonny Gray, Roy Oswalt, even Mike Mussina, I mean, I don't think they're an exaggeration at all. He's going to be really fun to follow this year. And I fully expect that he'll be a top five pick. Moving over to the second team, just really quickly, two guys who excite me are two guys draft eligible next year, 2022. Outfielder, center fielder Chris Newell University of Virginia. Living in Virginia, you know, a couple hours away from Charlottesville, I can't wait to see him this spring. I mean, he had a monster freshman year last year. He's a legitimate, I think the term five-tool player gets thrown around a lot in baseball, but he is a legitimate five-tool player. He looked really good last year. He's a kid from the North. He's from the Philadelphia area. And he was a little swing and miss in his game in high school, but he seemed to iron out a swing a lot last year. And he even homered off of Nick Swiney from NC State, a left-hander who went in the second round to the Giants. So he's another guy, just checks all the boxes, and I'd love to see, you know, how well he progresses this year, how well he develops. And the other guy is Oklahoma third baseman Peyton Graham. Very athletic player, was a shortstop in high school. He's got a cannon for an arm. He really showed a plus hit tool last year. And a lot of scouts think that as he fills out his 6'3", 180-pound frame, he's going to really improve his exit velocities. So those are four guys that, you know, in cotton on both of the teams, both of the All-American teams, that really excite me.
Yeah, one thing that Harris did for us over the last few weeks was really give us an appreciation for how talented that Virginia team is. And you might have seen that Virginia team creeped into our top 10 for the preseason rankings. And a lot of that's based off of the confidence that we have in their talent. But one thing that I want to talk about, so you talked about Jack Leiter. Obviously, you haven't talked about Kumar Rocker. But in terms of a 1-2 punch, Leiter, Rocker, maybe not that order, Rocker, Leiter right now, is a pretty formidable duo. There are a lot of things to like elsewhere in the SEC East with Florida's arms. So I want to get your take on two things. So which pitching staff is better? And I want to hear it from both a projectability perspective. So which pitching staff is going to send more guys to the pros and have more guys starting in the major leagues? And which pitching staff is better equipped to win weekend series at the college level?
So to answer the first part of your question, John, you know, from a projectability point of things, I would say Vanderbilt. I mean, just the star power alone of Rocker and Leiter. I mean, these guys have a shot to go 1-2. And I think the closest thing we've ever seen, at least in my memory, and I could be mistaken, was 2011 when Garrett Cole and Trevor Bauer from UCLA in 2011, you know, both, I believe Cole was number one overall and Bauer went a couple picks after him. We could very well see a repeating of history in July. I would not be shocked at all. So from a projected, as good, with all due respect to, you know, Tommy Mace, Jack Leftwich, and Hunter Barco, I think just the star power of Vandy's 1-2 is, you know, would put them over the top in answering your first part of your question. The second part of your question, this is a little bit of a cop-out, but I'm going to say whichever staff stays healthy. I mean, they're both so deep. It just comes down to, you know, who's got fewer pitchers on the injured list. You know, at this point we're splitting hairs. I mean, both staffs are exceptionally deep. I mean, if you look at Florida, for example, a kid like Timmy Manning, you know, very heralded left-hander coming out of high school, who in a normal year would have probably been, I mean, there was interest in Manning in this as high as the second round. I mean, he's not even going to be a midweek starter. I mean, he's going to be probably a middle reliever, you know, Saturday, Sunday. So just, you know, seeing how someone that talented is relegated to that role, I mean, shows you how deep the staff is. And it's the same with Vanderbilt. So, I mean, I'd love to be able to give you a definitive answer, but I would just say it's a toss up. And at the end of the day, it's whichever staff, has the most weapons at its disposal.
And I think healthy in two ways, both in terms of a baseball injury, but in terms of COVID too.
Of course, absolutely.
Contact tracing could, you know, knock out your rotation all of a sudden, that week or that midweek guy or that long reliever could be starting on Saturday or Sunday. And that could be really important for teams to have that depth. All right. So Harris wouldn't give me a definitive answer. So Kyle, I'm going to put you on the spot and make you're going to decide for us, Florida or Vanderbilt, which rotation are you taking right now?
Rotation for college, winning college games.
Yeah, let's do winning college games. If you had to win a weekend series in the SEC, which staff do you want at your disposal?
Well, I mean, putting up the 1-2 of Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, it's pretty hard to beat. Florida's bullpen is really, really good. Like you mentioned, Timmy Manning. There's also a few transfers they have in there. Trey Vanderweide from USC Upstate. They have a few really, really good power arms in the bullpen that can help extend games if they need to. And that's super important in the SEC when there's also power from the bats on both sides. So you have to be able to stop them throughout the entire game, not just for the first seven innings. I would probably pick Florida just because of the depth of the bullpen, but it'd be a really, really close toss up.
Yeah, one thing we haven't talked about either is Vanderbilt's early enrollee, Christian Little, who's, I think, a pretty interesting guy, really young, but is the type of guy who, I mean, he's going to be on high on draft boards come a couple of years, I think.
I would say that's a great point. The only thing is I see Corbin and the rest of Vanderbilt coaching staff really slowly easing him in. I mean, that staff is so deep. You know, why even run the risk of getting him in a situation in the tough SEC where he's a little bit over his head? I mean, I think Christian Little in a couple of years is going to be a monster, but I think this year we'll see him, but he'll be used very, very selectively.
Yeah, and something that'll be interesting just across the board in college baseball that will be interesting to see how it gets played out is pitch limits and things like that for whether guys haven't or haven't able to do, you know, individual workouts right now. A lot of schools are getting back to that, but you know, for guys out for a couple of weeks due to COVID or COVID tracing, and I mean, to Kyle's point, bullpens might be really important. You might need some guys that can go in and hold the game steady for 3-4 innings because, you know, starters only going 75 pitches or something like that. But it'll be interesting to see in 2021. I think coaches are going to have a fun time managing their staffs for sure. One last thing, Harris, I wanted to touch on with you. So in any good All-American exercise, I think it's important to put your own flavor on it and find a diamond in the rough. Find someone who you think is going to be really special. So who is the biggest reach on your All-America teams? Who's someone that maybe you're ahead of the curve compared to the rest of the industry on?
I said this in the article, it would have to be JT Schwartz, first baseman, UCLA. The funny thing is he was having a solid year last year when COVID hit, but more importantly, and I spoke to someone who saw him in a Northwoods League the summer before, so the summer of 2019, he went off. I mean, he hit essentially, I don't forget the exact numbers, but something like hit like 370 with a 475 on base and a strikeout rate of under 10%. I mean, the guy has unbelievable barrel awareness and has a very good idea of what he wants to do every time he goes to the plate. You know, the problem for him is he's a first baseman and he hasn't displayed much power yet, but he's got a long lean frame. He's about 6'4", 195. And, you know, if I'm a major league organization and I preach the gospel of launch angle and I'm confident in my ability to really transform young hitters, he's a guy I'm going to be looking very closely at because he's got some very interesting qualities. And, you know, truth be told, he's a guy that hasn't gotten a lot of publicity, you know, A, partly because of COVID, and B, partly because he didn't really play in 2019 during the spring. So I think diamond in the rough is a great way to describe JT Schwartz.
UCLA across the board sometimes has issue with exposure. They're just figuring out how to get their game streaming online. It seems 5 or 10 years behind everybody else. And I would say they're a little bit of a sleeping giant, even though, I mean, it's hard to say that because they were ranked number one at one point in 2019. And I think losing that super regional to Michigan, people kind of forgot that UCLA team might have been one of the best two or three teams in the country, and got, you know, a little bit unlucky in that super regional. But last year they're off to a really good start, and I think they are the prohibitive favorites in the Pac-12 right now in terms of, I mean, the talent is so ridiculously deep right now. So I think if we see another good year from UCLA making to regional, super regionals, you'll probably see some of that talent they have on display.
Well, yeah, exciting team, you know, up and down the lineup. You know, Matt McLean is a first team All-American, but then there's guys like Michael Curiali, I guess that's how he pronounces it, who I think is going to play center field this year, who's a really, really interesting talent. And he put up really big numbers in the Northwoods League. And there's a couple other guys, you know, Cardenas behind the plate. So, yeah, they're going to be a fun team to pay attention to.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Harris, and thanks for all the analysis that you offer for College Baseball Nation. We'll definitely have to have you back on as the season goes along and we start getting an idea of who are the guys from the college ranks that are going to end up going high in the MLB draft. But thanks so much for joining us.
And thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. Have a great night, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the College Baseball Nation podcast. You can find the podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and coming soon, hopefully this week, Apple Podcasts. Be sure to subscribe, and we would absolutely love it if you left a review. That really helps us get the word out about the podcast. Also, you can find us on social media at collegeballnat, and our website is collegebaseball.info. Thanks for listening and have a great week.